Welcome to Business Beyond Borders, the go-to podcast for CPA firms seeking transformative insights. I'm your host, Lawrence Whittam, and with each episode, we'll uncover key insights, best practices, and invaluable resources tailored for CPAs. From trending strategies to diving deep into outsourcing and offshoring, our experts will help in all areas of your business.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Business Beyond Borders. So I have a very cool episode today, actually, with one of my first accountants in the private world. And again, we're hitting it at the top right now. We're hitting a home run with who we've got. And from one of the really largest, best companies that you could really have it from, if we're thinking about culture, Google's the place to be. So we have Mike Manilak, who is a CPA. He's an accounting manager at Google. He's been in the public world. He's been with Cohn Resnick. He's been with PwC. He's been with other giants in the world like Walmart. And he also really gives back and shares his story quite a lot. So that's how I came across Mike on LinkedIn, actually. So I would definitely recommend the follow. He's an author of No Flux for Lux Given, just to be clear, just in case. It's still keeping it PG-ish over here. But it's about landing your accounting dream job, right? So he's really trying to help other people go through the area of what he's done as well in terms of how do you get to that position that you really want? And how do you, again, make it work for your lifestyle, right? As to, again, everybody's different. Everybody has different goals. But you've gone from, he's gone through really the top companies and got to those places, where, which is very credible. And again, very happy to have you on. Mike, do you want to give a quick intro to everybody as to who you are and a bit about your career?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. Good to chat with you and your audience, too. I think a lot of my story and background will probably resonate. I imagine a lot of people came through the public accounting circuit just like I did. But yeah, just to rewind a little bit, I'm from Baltimore, Maryland on the East Coast. Started out in public accounting on the audit side of the house, mainly with financial services companies, real estate companies, things like that. From there, shifted over to a big four firm, PwC, that you had called out, was there mainly still doing audits for financial services, just bigger companies, publicly traded, things like that. My goal was, which we might get into a little bit, is to jump into the Fortune 500, go to industry, which is a pretty common exit from public accounting, is to go into private industry. And my idea was to, if I could get into the Fortune 500, I'd be able to prove myself there and then sort of have a lot of opportunities open up. So that was my goal there, and ended up landing a spot with Walmart as part of their e-commerce division. So I handled the P&L and balance sheet of Walmart.com, which is a pretty fun side of the business. They were going toe-to-toe with Amazon at that point and was part of the rollout of their first like subscription-based two-day shipping model. So fun time to be there. And then from there, that at that point, I was out in the Bay Area. So I had moved across the country, mainly to be close to the action, as far as I defined it. And that ended up playing out pretty well, or working in my favor pretty well. But after Walmart, ended up interviewing all across up and down Silicon Valley and beyond, I feel like. But ended up landing the job that I would consider back then, and even to this day, my dream job, which was to be in the finance team at Google. So I'm a revenue accounting manager now at Google, manage a team of five. It's a distributed team. So I have people in LA and Austin, Texas, a bunch of us sitting with me in Chicago in the West Loop, which is where I'm located now. It's been a wild ride, but things are going good. And excited to be able to share some of anything that I have to offer back with your audience. Like you said, I do like to try to give back, because I feel like you don't necessarily hear too many success stories. Not to say that it's necessarily a success story, but I remember when I was coming up, I would have loved to have heard from somebody from like a big tech company and how they did it. And I didn't really have that, you know, and I think some of those voices are being heard now, but they're still few and far between. And as much as I can be one of those people to say like, hey, there's a fun and fulfilling side of accounting out there. It may be a little hard to find, but it's there and you can have it. So that's sort of the message that I try to push out there.
Now, out of interest, digging deep into something you mentioned about that the typical path, right? So a lot of people do it. They go into public, right? They go a lot of the times with a big four, and then they move to maybe a more regional or mid-sized firm in some cases, or the opposite, right? But then they tend to then sway towards, they're doing that to get into private, right? In some fashion, right? And there is a proven track of that, right? Now, out of interest, and again, this is going back a few years, but like, what were maybe some of your reasons for wanting to take that path? Was it that you really just wanted to get to a Google or was it just the education around it that you saw more people doing that type of track and that's how you would make the money? Or what was it like that was resonating with you a little bit to make you not stay in the public sector as well, if you don't mind?
Yeah, it wasn't that I saw a bunch of people leave into their dream jobs. I feel like I never saw that. But I did, you know, I was close to a decade in public accounting, and that's a lot of busy seasons for anybody who's been through some busy seasons. And right about that time, that's kind of when people settle down, they have a house, they have a kid. And I was doing repeat clients. I was a manager at the time. So the work was interesting. I thought the pay was good. I loved my coworkers. The office is in cool locations. Like a lot of it I did really like, but I didn't love the busy seasons. You know, maybe that's the understatement of the century, maybe, but you know, and yes, it does pay off outside of busy season, but, some people probably have been in this boat too, but if you're in public accounting long enough, you've got your 1231 clients. So that gives you a busy season for basically the first 3-4 months of the year. And then all of a sudden, oh, here's a 630 client and a 930 client. And, you know, and before you know it, you've got not a full year of busy season. You're not doing 70-hour weeks all year round, but you know, it was kind of getting old. And the more I thought about it, I was just looking out to see like, well, if you're doing a decade in it, you're kind of at this pivotal moment of, is this what I do the rest of my career? I almost feel like at close to 10 years, you have to decide, like, is this what I'm doing? Am I going to go for partner? Because I was probably kind of ready to push for senior manager. And I started to think, do I even really want senior manager? Or is that me wanting it because it's the next thing? Which I love public accounting because it is pretty easy to go associate to senior.
Career ladder, right? It's a very defined career ladder.
It is. So, you know, you don't have, and it's a good pay. You know, there's a lot of good aspects to it. So before you know it, you could end up being manager and then say, I still don't even know what I want to do with my life, you know? So part of that was just looking on the outside and seeing like, well, there's people that are working at these cool companies that, you know, if I were to ever say, all things considered, like what's a cool company to work for? I'm probably not naming an accounting firm. And that's not a dig on an accounting firm. But then, then I start to say, well, every big company needs all those companies I named have to have an accounting team, which is true. And that's a benefit of going into accounting. So I started to think, well, if somebody else can do it, well, why can't I do it? And, you know, that's like a little spark that can, if you blow on those embers a little bit, can turn into a whole flame. And then before you know it, you just can't stop thinking about it. Yeah, and I started testing the waters a little bit there. So it wasn't out of really disliking public accounting. And it wasn't that there was bountiful opportunities knocking at my door. It was a little bit of maybe the curiosity and thinking that I already know what public accounting is, but I don't know what the other side is. And maybe it's worth testing those waters.
Cool. And I agree with you. I mean, it's especially from, I think that's a lot of people's approach, especially with the busy season. I do see firms really trying to work on that. I mean, they're looking at alternate staffing options. They're looking at ways that they can make sure their team isn't having to stretch. But the busy season's still there, right? And for the majority of firms, it's still there. And as you said, I mean, it doesn't stop the higher you go. You could get to a partner. You are still, if not more so, running a 70-hour, 80-hour work week, right? So again, it's definitely still being worked on, I would say, in the profession, but it's definitely moving a little bit, right, from the public side. So now, what about, again, coming to your team now, right? So you work in quite a virtual environment, right? Your team is sort of spotted all over. And so can you tell us a little bit about that? Because now, we have the same in the public side of things as well, right? And also with private companies, we see more and more finance teams being diversified across. They're looking for the right people. They don't care about the geography as much anymore. So how are you managing your team appropriately? Like, are there ways, controls that you've put in place, and or are there things that you do to keep everybody together and motivated to continue to work in the right fashion? Like, because that's something that I think a lot of people are going through, and especially managers are going through now, having to learn, and quite quickly, because a lot of these firms and businesses weren't used to working in a virtual environment, in the accounting function especially, pre-COVID. Right. And that was only a few years ago. So can you share a bit about that?
Yeah. And just real quick on that last point about managers trying to figure it out. To be honest, I think everybody is just winging it, because there isn't really formal training about here's how you lead a team in a virtual environment. You're lucky if you get training on here's how to lead a team. And a lot of companies do that, really, and things like that. But not every company does that either. Because a lot of people are promoted into that manager position because they're good at their job, not because they're good at coaching and mentoring and managing people. And then to do it in a virtual environment is incredibly challenging. So, you know, I totally relate to all the managers that are feeling burnout or maybe feel a little bit lost. And then the staff, the direct reports are looking for guidance too, you know, and unfortunately, like, You can't look to the managers because they haven't received necessarily formal training, and the managers can't look to the execs because they don't know what they're doing either. You know, they're old school. They're saying go back to the office.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
That's how we get it done. So I've been a little fortunate in that even with Walmart, another global company, and then at Google, like, I was always video conferencing around the world, different time zones and things like that. Even when it was a 5-day in the office environment, you're always working with different teams from across the world or across the US. So that wasn't necessarily new for me, but I was fortunate in that I was able to pick up some techniques on how to make that work. So COVID really sent us all back working from home 100%. You don't even have any of the in-office time. So and now a lot of people, I think, have transitioned to a hybrid approach. So I feel like if it's fully remote, you probably tackle it one way. If it's hybrid, it's a little bit different. For example, in a hybrid team, which I think a lot of accounting teams are, a lot of the techniques and things that we'll try to do is most firms aren't dictating which days of their 3 day or 2 days that they have to be in the office. But I honestly think that's a little bit too ambiguous, because then you end up coming in to be with your team and nobody's there.
They're always there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, every time.
Yeah, I've talked to many firms doing that.
So
exactly.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they're taking the super long weekend essentially at home. That's what they're doing. So
exactly. And then if you think, like, from the company standpoint, they're trying to even it out so that, you know, some people are there Friday so that they can probably shrink their real estate cost, right? But if everyone shows up all at the same days, you know, like, that problem doesn't go away. So one thing, like, it kind of feels like you're pulling back on some flexibility of the hybrid work. But one thing, like, my team and I have done is to all try to come into the office on the same day of the week. And that some of them are live with me and some of them are still in a remote location, but like, so we picked Thursdays, so at least we're not like ships passing in the night, you know, we're at least getting able to get together. And then the other thing is we focus those days on collaboration, and it's very team meeting heavy. It's built around, if there is someone in the office on your team, like, you're having your one-on-ones and syncs with them there to connect. The other thing that I don't see any really accounting and finance teams doing, curious to see if you've seen this too, but I've really been a big proponent of leveraging the digital whiteboard. So that's basically, you can pull it up in Teams. We're using Teams now. You can pull up a whiteboard here in a second. You can do it in Miro, and Google Meet has different whiteboards, and Slack has that. Zoom has its own whiteboard. They all have whiteboards that nobody's using. It's almost like in the office, there's whiteboards everywhere and nobody's using them.
Nobody uses them.
But I've really leaned into that, because when you're all in a remote location, you know, being able to scribble some notes down, get your team's ideas out on a screen, and have everybody be able to drop their notes in too on a post-it or to add a picture of a meme that's kind of funny, or like a YouTube video, or even like a spreadsheet or something. You know, the whiteboards now are super versatile. So I use that a lot. And that's one where, even though my team is in different locations, we're all kind of working on the same product at the same time. And then the other benefit of that is, because we're in different time zones, when you all leave the meeting, we all have access to that same digital whiteboard. You can work on it individually too. So there's like a synchronous collaboration, and then an asynchronous work that can be done too. So I feel like it's what's really been helpful with the onset of COVID are the tools that have came out have really gotten good. Like, yeah. Most people will stop at a Zoom call and a team chat.
I was going to say, I mean, this is it's an interesting point, because I see all the time, like they'll create client groups, right? So if there is collaboration on specific clients, they'll have groups with those individuals that are part of that group. They will be collaborating, but generally from a verbal side of it, they'll obviously get on their Teams calls as well and talk about it. However, when you really think about it, people learn and take things in differently. So it's like, and I think I actually read this on your web personal website about how you are very much a visual learner, right? So, and this is where you've got to have understanding as a leader, especially, you've got to understand your team, right? So mm-hmm. Some people are going to benefit hugely from that type of different mindset of, okay, let's put it on this whiteboard. Let's show them how we're doing this. And it also becomes a bit quicker, like typing something compared to freehand writing. I can, if I'm presenting or if I'm looking into putting together a presentation, I can prepare it a lot better actually freehand than I can typing it out on a computer. I think about formatting then. I think about all these different things as I'm doing it on the system, rather than on a piece of paper. I can just jot it down. I can look at how I should visualize it. And again, so that's an awesome way to collaborate in a different way with your team as well. So that's cool.
Yeah. I think adding the visuals, like, that's not a secret. A picture is worth 1,000 words. We all know it. But I think if there's probably some people listening that are like, oh, I use visuals here. Let me flash up a slide deck and I'll go through slide by slide. You know, that's not game changing stuff there either. And you putting up a block of text on a 50 slide presentation, your team's probably not going to be engaged. You know, there's a reason why, this is my experience and probably a lot of others too, but there's a reason why most of the team in a big virtual meeting is sitting on mute. God forbid somebody goes camera off, like, right? There's no collaboration there. But it's the same two people that are always chiming in on the meeting. You know, it's very hard to get an engaging meeting in a virtual environment. So anything that you can do to try to do that. And there are tools out there now, like Loom is another good tool where you can pre-record stuff. And even like the Google suite of like Google Docs, being able to leave comments in a doc, like all those things I think are really powerful. And I think people should really start, especially managers, should start to think beyond just, I have a Zoom call, I have a team ping chat, and I share slides. Like, that would have been true 2 months into COVID. If you're still doing the same thing that you were doing 2 months into COVID, that's a shame on you type approach. And most people aren't saying, well, here, do this, here, try this, here, try this. So, you know, a lot of times we talk about with AI, like, where do we upskill ourselves? And I think a lot of it has to be, well, like these kind of things, leverage the tools for this new work environment that's really been being dominated by AI and virtual work. That's where we should spend our time and really upskill ourselves. If you're still using the same old approach from the beginning of COVID, like you need to kind of make sure that you're continuing to grow too. And I think you'll see benefits from the output from your team too.
Now, out of interest, just from like, when we look at your team, right, currently, like where does it fluctuate as well, just out of interest from an age range perspective, right? Because again, we're actually working right now in a timing where I think I heard it at the Digital CPA conference this year, we're actually working with the most generations within a working culture that we've ever done before, right? I mean, from the baby boomers down to, I think it's Gen Zs now. So like, how many of those are sort of in your group that you're working with? are you adapting to that team? Like, do you see more adaption from the younger generation or from the older generation? Or what does that sort of look like for you?
Yeah, that's a really cool topic to dive into. So I'm glad that it got brought up at that conference because, man, it's very different than if you're used to working with like a lot of folks from the baby boomer generation. They might still be printing stuff out. Like, I haven't used a printer in years, I think. But yeah.
I despise printers, but carry on.
And that's so different than like, and I'm an older millennial, right? But even like somebody from Gen Z, what's a printer? What's a fax machine kind of thing? Like,
yeah.
I'm fortunate in that I guess the company grew pretty fast, especially during COVID, with a lot of people being online. So my team, I consider it a relatively small team of five, but there's folks that are coming fresh out of school, so Gen Z. Then there's those that have already been through the Big Four circuit, some that did multiple Fortune 500s before coming in, but also in that millennial, a younger millennial phase, and then some that did the combination of Big Four and Fortune 500 and now Google. So everyone, it's not just the age group, it's the vast amount of experience, and people are at different levels too. So that's a challenge. One, managing one team, giving one message that can speak to the varying levels of experience. I think that's a challenge. And then two is the different generational divide. So I think for any millennials out there, which I think a lot of the managers today probably are in that millennial range, we're in a really interesting we have a really interesting opportunity because we should be young enough and in tune with what's going on to be able to manage the younger generation and relate to what Gen Z is saying with work-life balance and mental health. You know, I'm like, yeah, work-life balance. I get it. But also still relate to maybe the older generation that is saying like, hey, you got to do your time. And, you know, this isn't all fun and games. And, you know, you got to put the hours in and hard work goes a long way. And I can relate to a lot of that, too. So I think, yes, I do manage a varying age group and experience level. And that is a challenge. That's sort of why I mentioned earlier, like the regular one-on-ones and things like that, which are more important if you're not sitting in the same location with somebody, to have those be more frequent.
Yeah.
But the actual structure and the content of that meeting and the expectations of how I deliver my message and how I receive and feedback too is very different from maybe the more junior members to the most senior members. So, you know, we talk about adaptability a lot. And I think at the manager group, it's not just adapting to like the new work environment of, you know, that's dominated by AI and remote work. You really got to be adaptable with learning the new tools and also adaptable in the messaging that you're giving to the younger staff versus the more experienced staff and some that have kids and some that don't. And, you know, that is a very tailored approach that is different than just managing the work. And I think sometimes in public accounting, I felt like, yes, I might have managed people, but I was mainly managing the engagements, making sure the work was done. I was mainly managing the work. I don't know that I was, maybe that I wasn't the best manager now that I'm saying this, but I wasn't trying to get the best out of, you know, my reports and make sure that they reached their maximum potential and, you know, broke out of their shell and really leaned into their strengths, which is something that Google is very like people management focused. And I appreciate that. And I've had that mentorship from my managers and I've tried to give that back too, but it is definitely a unique situation. So I don't know if they had any like tips or anything that came out of that, but it's very different in that the older generation, they want to hop on a call. Let me call you real quick. The Gen Z, can we just chat about this over ping?
Don't shoot me a detailed email. Shoot me a couple of messages.
Oh, right? Yeah, it's done. Exactly. It's and you kind of got to be able to ebb and flow. And so I think as much as you can relate to the generation above you and the generation below you, you're kind of setting yourself up for the future, I think.
Yep. No, that's cool. And now, so let's just say, like with Google, obviously, like, very attractive company to work for. I mean, I remember in college, like, Google is one of the main sort of examples of like, yeah, everybody's, even if you're coming out of college, doesn't matter what you're going for, you just put in a random application for Google just in case, right? Yeah, but it's now, and they've gone the campus route, right? They've developed huge, put a lot of money into workspaces and making sure they were ahead of the game from that perspective. Now, when we shift to more of this virtual work, and again, it sounds like you guys are maybe utilizing an office from Google once a week, right? But to me, that was a very attractive point previously, right? From the office, how an office looks and having the expectation of we're going to be in an office, so let's make it look as good as possible. Let's make it as attractive as possible. What have you seen Google doing, right? Especially around COVID and stuff like that. How did they shift their workplace culture and model to more of this virtual environment as well? Where, because again, I mean, it would be very easy for me from a high, from an outside perspective saying, I spent all this money and time and effort into building this awesome infrastructure and culture that I think this is what people want. We know that this is what people want because we hear it and we're on this pedestal. But now that's shifted completely post-COVID, right? Because now people are used to working from home for a couple of years, right? In that sense as well. And now everybody's thought about like, no, I actually enjoy being in the comfort of my own home more so than even a super nice office in some cases. And it's going to vary from person to person. So what did you see just even for Google, like being a prime example, like how did you see them shift?
You know, the collaborative spaces were there, I think, already, but they've leaned into that more. And it's been more about the open spaces, less about the desk setup. You know, like if you've ever worked somewhere where it looks like cubicle hell, where you look across and there's 300, you know, you don't really see that at Google, because the idea is if you're in the office, you're using the other spaces and, you know, collaborating live with other teams. So I've seen them lean into that more. A lot of it too is just there has been a good bit of training in that, hey, things are a little bit different now. Like it never used to be the case where you could kind of feel like a little ostracized from the team. If you're the one person who's on the Zoom call, you kind of feel left out. Maybe you don't get the best opportunities. And there has been some training on those kind of things of etiquette, of making sure there is this inclusive behavior, regardless of where you're sitting. And that everyone kind of gets their fair share. So where, you know, maybe before there used to be a big screen that somebody would kind of come pop up on a video conference. Now we've even got two big screens, you know, bigger than my football Sunday type screen. And that's in the presence of the full team there. And then a little spoiled in this regard, because I mentioned that I was a big fan of the digital whiteboard, but we actually have physical digital whiteboards in a lot of our conference rooms so that you could be using that on your tablet at the same time as my reports in Austin or LA could be using the physical hardware in the room to jot down notes and to highlight, you know, areas of process improvement or automation ideas and things like that. So it's very much it's about as close as you can get to feeling like you're in one room at the same time.
It's funny you mentioned, and again, just going back to what you mentioned earlier, just so that there's relevance to it for everybody in the public field, the bullpen, I've gone around, I've been shown around offices when I visit firms and they're like, this is the bullpen. This is where the action, and it's like, all right, guys, I mean, if we're referring to it as a bullpen, it's not a good idea anyway. So, which again, years ago, this is meeting them pre-COVID, I would say. Yeah. And I think there's been a lot more open concept with firms now and restructuring of offices and how we're doing it. But it's that bullpen environment that maybe for tax season or community or just, it's not the best view from an outsider, but it's changed a lot. So that's cool. Now, and then coming into one of the things you mentioned prior to the call, right? And from our last conversation, like you mentioned, you're taking a couple of months off soon, right? So, and again, I think one of the things that I got from you as well over a few conversations was that you've really shot for getting into the best environment to do your best work, right? And I don't know, right? We haven't gone into details as to, do you regularly take time off? Some people don't, right? Some people really don't take much time off at all, but then they go and do, and they want to take off when they really need it, right? And that's from a headspace perspective, from a mental health perspective and things like that. It's going to vary from people to people, right? So now, and it sounds like you have a very flexible environment as well, where you can make that decision, right? You've got your work done. You're going to have, I'm sure, as a manager, some challenges during that time. You're going to be accessible by calls, maybe to a limitation to make sure that things keep moving in the right direction. But because 2 months is a decent amount of time, right? Compared to a normal 2 week holiday or something like that. But I would assume you've put in your time to get that, right? I'm assuming you don't go on 2 month vacations a couple of times a year. If you do, right, yeah, that'd be awesome. But can you tell us a little bit about that? Because again, it's an attractive, it's a cool thing. And I think that that's something else that firms need to understand, because I think we've had like that model of just have unlimited vacation days, right, and stuff like that, and then we hear about all these reports like that people end up taking less time off than they really should, and then people, but there are the occasional ones that take advantage of it, right, and stuff like that. So out of interest, like, what does that structure look like maybe at Google, and how can you explain a little bit about how you were taking that time off and what you're doing to plan for that time off as well?
Yeah, love talking about this kind of thing, because I've never done a 2+ months time off at once. And, you know, I think it's a privilege, and, you know, we'll be doing some traveling across Europe, so there's a cost component to it too. And you're kind of uprooting your life. Your bills don't stop. Like, so for a lot of people, it's a logistic nightmare. But, you know, part of me, the same as, you know, trying to make the best life for myself as I can, and having accounting be that vehicle that's provided that opportunity to do the things in life that I want. You know, I guess more over the years, the more I start looking at the rat race and how you wait until you're 62 or 65 to retire and then you travel the world. Guess what? They never do. They never do. You're old, you've got problems, you don't have any money. You never get to do those things. And part of me just always felt like that doesn't make sense. Like, maybe you can have a glimpse of that when you're kind of in your prime, so you can really enjoy it, right? But you don't see that many people taking sabbaticals and things like that. So for me, it was very much, one, figuring out what do I want in life? And that includes, like, do I want public accounting? Do I want industry? What type of job do I want in industry? What type of flexibility do I want? Do I want to be in the office? Do I not? And until you define those things of what you want, you can't expect it to drop in your lap. So for me, it was, I would love to be able to have a couple months off and travel, and, you know, really 15+ years into my career felt like a good time to kind of take a little break. And, you know, part of that is the goodwill that you've been on the team for a while, right? And you kind of have some processes in place. But there's some other things too, like, yes, I do take vacation, but I also accrue a good bit. Take some half days, whereas maybe some people would take full days. And so I basically am burning all of my accrued PTO, going for a chunk of it unpaid, which I know a lot of people would be scared from too. But if you really want to do those things, you kind of got to take a little from here and there and make it work. And, you know, outside of public accounting, you may not have busy season, but you still have month end close, and you still got quarter end close, and you still got year end close. So the way I'm structuring it is I'm going to be here until after a month end close, and then that's when I leave. And then I'm going to come back right before another month end close, so that I'm trying to limit the amount of maybe the busier times where I'm not available. And then even, like, a lot of that comes down to my team. Like, I've got an awesome team, but you have to build that, right? You have to be able to build up a team that can withstand you not being there. And I'm very excited for that. It's something that is still an exception even at Google. I still had to get, you know, permission to take that chunk of time off and put myself in a position where I felt like they would say yes, you know, number one, and then make the financial sacrifices and the planning and the accruing the PTO. But at the end of the day, I have a feeling when we catch up in a couple, you know, 3 months, 4 months from now, I'm going to say it was all worth it, you know. And I understand that not every profession can offer that. And not every, even in the best professions at the best companies, that you might not see people doing a sabbatical. But for me, I feel like I love this shift to from like a work-life balance to a life-work balance.
Yep.
You know, and I love that Gen Z's pushing that and saying like, I don't know that I'm okay with the 80-hour weeks. Maybe I just won't take accounting, you know, and I'll do something else. And I kind of like that they're forcing the hand of change. And that's been contagious for me too. And I want to lean into that work-life balance too, while still being a high performer as well. So juggling those things has been a challenge, but it's been super fun. And I think for anybody listening, if you're like, well, I'm stuck in this job or I'm in this rut, like there are ways to get out of those ruts and go after the things that you want. But to your point, when you said like, I'll submit an application just to give it a shot after college, a lot of people don't even do that. You know, so I would encourage anybody that's like, well, he's doing a sabbatical and he works at Google, but that's never going to happen for me. I mean, I'm really nothing special. Like I didn't go to a fancy school or, you know, have any deep connections or nobody referred me into any of these companies. So it's kind of cliche to say if I could do it, anybody could do it. But you know, I don't think people should place these things out of their mind and say, why bother trying? Because you're never going to get what you want if you say, why bother trying?
Yeah. And I think the big thing there as well is because, again, we have a mixture of people that listen. I mean, from really the full spectrum of whether they're people just in the profession or coming into it or partners are listening as well. Right. So and directors in private practice as well. So when it comes to like the leader side of that, I think it's also being open. And like you said, having those one-on-ones, making sure you understand what's important to your team. And again, if they want to take those types of things, like you said, I mean, you're taking a sacrifice doing unpaid leave, but they've given you the opportunity to do that, right? In that sense as well. They haven't said, no, I mean, yeah, you've already taken a sacrifice, but no, we don't want you to do that, right? Because we've got the month end close. We've got these things, right? I mean, you're taking it responsibly, right? You're making sure the work gets done. You're making sure your team is well prepared to get it done. And I think that's a little bit of what we need to see at leadership as well and make sure those conversations are happening so that some people are going to want that. Some people are going to need a smaller break, but maybe every month so that they can refresh and get set. Yeah. Right. And especially during these busy times as well. Like, as you know, I mean, we're in the smack bang middle of tax season, right? I am surprised. Like I've had conversations with leaders in firms the day before the business deadline. And I was like, I've been in this, doing this for 10 years. There are very rare times that I have any conversations, even in the season, let alone between like anywhere near March to end of April, really.
Forget about it. Yeah.
But they're having the conversation. So they do care. I would say more so now. And I think a lot of people are trying to put these different places in or things in place to help to make sure that their team isn't as busy or they have ways that they can take a little break during the season, for example, and actually have coverage, right? And they have the flexibility to do so. And it does take time for the change, but at least they're having the conversation, I see. So no, but yeah. It's very, very cool you sharing that. And and again, I mean, where can people find you? Because again, you're posting things, right? I mean, you have some funny posts. I know that you do all your caricatures and like different pictures and stuff, which is pretty hilarious. Making, and again, treating it on the lighter side, right? I mean, you're talking about it, your experience, what's happening, but we'll say poking the bear to some extent with some of the posts, right? Yeah. And it's of the profession, right? I mean, we do need to change, but it's putting a different light around it. But it's talking about it quite transparently. But especially if you're a visual learner, go look at Mike's posts because they're hilarious. And even during tax season, go have a look. It'll make you laugh. And it'll cool you off and then get back to work probably. But where can they find you? And I would assume, other than outside of your holiday, over the next couple of months, they can reach out if they want to have a conversation and if they want to maybe just shoot a couple of ideas to you.
Yeah, definitely. On the poking the bear point too, like I feel like there's either one side of the coin that gets talked about all the time. It's either the negative side of accounting, and that's all people talk about. And then as if there is no positive side, or there's this positive side that's almost pretending like the negative side doesn't exist. That's what we call Kool-Aid, right? Yep, you're just drinking the Kool-Aid, all the Kool-Aid posts. I feel like it's you need a healthy mix of both. And I think avoiding the problem is not the way to do it. You need to shine light on the problems, fix it. But then let's not forget to highlight all the cool stuff about the profession, because there's a lot, you know.
Great.
I would love for anybody to reach out to me. Look me up on LinkedIn, Mike Manilak, CPA. And then also check out my website, mikefromaccounting.com. On there, I have, you mentioned the No Flux Given playbook, how to land the accounting job of your dreams. That kind of goes through my journey of, interviewing across Silicon Valley at like an Amazon and Meta and Twitter, Salesforce, Uber, Nike, companies like that, and kind of the formula I came up with that I started to see success. I also, I mentioned the digital whiteboard. I have a course out there that shows people how to kind of use that. So for anyone seeking a remote role or looking to get promoted into a manager role where you're going to be leading a virtual team, I break it down into a crash course, very simple. One tool, the digital whiteboard, and then what I call the five elements of collaborative kung fu. So I sort of have some fun with it and get sketchy on the digital whiteboard. So check that out. But yeah, other than that, shoot me a message. I like to think that I'm pretty accessible. Hope I get to hear from some of the folks from your listeners. And maybe we'll do a catch up in this time next year. And things have changed. You know, I do feel like things are on the upswing in the accounting profession. So would love to kind of do a where are they now type thing in a year from now or so.
No, I appreciate that. So no, I definitely would definitely have you back on. I'm sure we'll get lots of people coming in and hopefully sharing as well and asking questions, right, is the big thing. Yeah. And I think I'm going to check out for sure the whiteboard bit as well, because I've seen it's there. I don't use it personally as well. I think it could be a cool collaboration. And I think as well, like from knowing the team that I work with, a lot of boomers in that sense as well. Like generally older generation, very experienced, they know what they're talking about. But I know that whenever I bring up anything new in the ways that we can collaborate and things like that, they love it. I mean, a lot of the leaders love the way that you can visualize stuff and share in different manners, and they embrace it. But they don't necessarily pick it up as easily as necessarily the younger generation. So as managers, like you said, learning how to do this and sharing it, it's only going to impress leaders as well. And they're going to see it in different formats. So it's very cool. So definitely check it out. Check Mike out. And again, hope everybody had a very fun episode on Business Beyond Borders. And we'll see you on future episodes. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Business Beyond Borders. I'm Lawrence Whittam, and it's been a pleasure bringing you impactful insights tailored for the modern CPA firm. Remember, the world of accounting is vast and ever-evolving, and we're here to navigate it together. For more resources and episodes, don't forget to subscribe and reach out to our experts. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries of your business and explore the limitless possibilities beyond borders.